Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 26. We'll cover text 7 and just begin on text number 8. Fundamental principles of material nature. We ended with just reading the translation for text 7. Material consciousness is the cause of one's conditional life. And the Sanskrit begins with tat. Tat is a pronoun referring to something, that, tat. So that, and the word for word is translated as from the misconception. Which is what we heard yesterday. The specific misconception. Prabhupada used the phrase 5 times in a short purport, calling it material consciousness. But it's a twofold material consciousness, very much following the understanding of chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita. The first misunderstanding is our dear friend, false ego. Soul misidentifying with matter. In that simple statement, which we hear so many times, it's implied forgetfulness of who we really are. So we just say it very simply, misidentification with the body, or the soul's accepting, the individual's accepting, my identity is this body. My identity is what I am not. Again, implied is forgetting who we are. So Kapila, when speaking to Devahuti, explains how it happens. There's a potency of the material energy which the personality of Godhead unleashes or awakens from a dormant avyakta state to a manifest state, and the prakriti is there, and the living entity becomes influenced by the deluding potency. Jnana guhaya, if you recall from our discussion yesterday. Knowledge is taken away. Knowledge is covered. Who I really am is covered, and I accept something that I'm not. And all of that is the first part of the misconception or material consciousness, but it doesn't stop there. The verse that we read yesterday speaks of what the second part. Second part is the misconception that I am the cause of my activity. And I am the cause of the result of my activity. And that I am inducing others to act. When we know from Bhagavad Gita, those three things, they're done by material nature. They're not done by me. But if I identify with myself with the body, then I'm the cause of my work. I'm the cause of the results of my work. And I'm causing others to work. The Sanskrit phrase in yesterday's verse, karmashu kriyamaneshu gunair atmani manyate. Krishna says manyate also. He has an opinion. Krishna's opinion is fact. He describes in the end of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita as the topmost form of yoga. And states his opinion. The best is Shadhavan bhajate yo mam samayukta tamo mataha mataha manyate. In my opinion, the living entity adopts the mentality, manyate, that the work that I do is self-actuated. That's how Prabhupada has spoken about it in the purport. Self-actuated. I am the cause of my work. When the reality is, Prakriti is the cause, and I'm just going along for the ride. Prabhupada gives the simple example of riding in a car or flying in an airplane. When you're riding in the car, you're moving at however many kilometers per hour. Let's say 40 kilometers per hour. And just sitting there. But you're moving at 40 kilometers, 50 kilometers, 60 kilometers, 80 kilometers, and you're just sitting there, going along for the ride, flying in an airplane. I don't know what it is in kilometers, but 500 miles an hour. Zoom, 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 and you're just sitting there. Similarly, the soul is situated within the heart, and the machine, yantra, this body, made of material nature, is doing so many things. But when we identify with matter, we think, I'm doing so many things. It's a double whammy, a double controlling mechanism. The language that's found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, so Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, we're covering these two, how they're parallel, and just described in further precise detail. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, the terms are avaranatmaka shakti and prapekshatmaka shakti. Heard those before? Throwing potency and the covering potency. Part of what transcendental knowledge is doing is to give, by giving knowledge, to remove the misconception. At least one of them. I'm not this body. But just same as Bhagavad Gita proceeds. Krishna speaks about the true identity, the soul. But then Krishna speaks about the second part, which is more than theoretical, it's practical. When you have the conception that you're spirit soul, okay, got that one down, I'm spirit soul, and now I start to work. And what happens? We completely forget the conception, I'm spirit soul, and we identify with the work. That's a common thing that people would have said to me. Maharaj, I get it. You know, as far as sadhana bhakti, I get up in the morning and I know what to do and it's great. I feel Krishna conscious. And then I go to the workplace, turn on my computer, and 8 hours later I turn off the computer and I don't know what happened. My Krishna consciousness went out the window. What happened? I don't get it. I get the sadhana bhakti part, but the practical application part I don't get. Something like that. We're fine. For the course of our whole morning program, it's a very nice morning program. Mangalarti and japa and guru puja and kirtan, it's great. Srimad Bhagavatam class, great. Then go to school or go to work or go to back to your house and something happens. We forget because we get this other covering, potency. We so strongly identify. That's how text 7 begins. Tat. That misconception, that material consciousness. So the verse reads, tat, material consciousness, is the cause of one's conditional life, in which conditions are enforced upon the living entity by the material energy. Wait a minute, I thought I was the doer, but now it's telling me, Kapila Deva is telling me, I'm forced. I'm not forced, I have freedom. Okay. Let's see you walk across the floor without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Let's see you digest your food without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Let's see you think a thought without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Let's see you blink your eyelid. You're not independent. You're not the cause of your activity. It's foolish. Wait a minute. I'm independent. It's not so. But material, so many things are, in the language here, enforced upon us. At least in the English language, they sometimes call police the law enforcement agency. There's laws, and there's the enforcement of the laws. If you don't follow the law, you're going to follow the law. And if you don't, the police are there to enforce the law. The material nature is very nice comparison. It's a prison house. And there's the enforcement of the laws in the prison house. There's outside the prison house, but when you're outside the prison house, then there's obedience to the laws of the Supreme Lord voluntarily. But those that are rebellious, it's involuntary. Okay, you're free. Go to jail. Sit in jail and tell everybody that you're free. Go ahead. I don't accept the government. Forget these laws. I'm independent. Okay. There's a place for you, Buster. You're in jail. And the law enforcement in jail is this conditioning force of the material energy, preceded by the other two misconceptions that make up material consciousness. Although the spirit soul does not do anything and is transcendental to such activities, he is thus affected by conditional life. So we have these terms, conditioned soul, liberated soul. The soul is transcendental. There's several terms that are used akartu. So karta means cause and akarta. The non-doer. That's really what our position is, although we're the non-doer. Ishasya, we're independent. Shakshinaha, like Shakshi Gopal. Shakshi, we're the witness. Prabhupada expresses it in the purport. In conditional life, the living entity actually remains as a captive in the hands of the material energy. Whatever the material energy dictates, the conditioned soul does. This is discussed very nicely in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam gunasangosya sadasadhyana jama jonishu. Prabhupada explains, depending upon the aptitude of living entity to be an enjoyer, that's guna, and his previous activity, that's karma, he gets a body. So if you get the body of a dog, what do? You bark, and you wag your tail, and you do things like that, because you got the body of a dog. And you get the body of a king. You sit on a throne. I'm king. You get the body of a bird. You fly in the sky. And you know, they don't go to flying school. They just they know exactly what to do. It's all dictated by the modes of nature. I remember one time, it was a nice experience. It was on traveling Sankirtan, distributing books, traveling in a van. And there was a bus, and several vans would go out and come back and join the bus at night. The bus parked at a park, big state park. Real nice, quiet, peaceful. So I was sitting there, had some little chanting to finish at night, and a flock of geese. You have geese? Flocks of geese? Okay. So they were quack, 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 quack. You're making that sound, flying in a V formation. How do they know to quack, and how do they know to fly in a V formation? It's just the modes of nature. They're impelling them. And then there was a nice stream, and it was the time of year, just as the geese are again flying back north, the fish are swimming upstream to lay their eggs. They don't go to swimming school. They don't go to where you lay your egg school. They're impelled by the modes of nature. And you'll look around, and everything that's happened, just as Krishna says, it's just happening by the force of material nature. If it were thinking, we're independent. We're not geese, we're not fish, we're not trees. We're human beings. But we're also impelled by the modes of nature. And there's a series of events that took place before that takes place. Whatever the material energy dictates, the conditioned soul does. He has no responsibility. He is simply a witness of the action. That's the reality. Then there's illusion. But he is forced to act in that way, in material consciousness, due to his offense in his eternal relationship with Krishna. So there's this primordial thing for all conditioned souls. Jiva Goswami, in his Bhakti Sandarbha, presents a premise. If we could understand, I remember explaining this right here in this room sometime previously, but we'll do it again. If we understand how we got into our material circumstance, that tells us how to get out of our material circumstance. Just like how we got into this room, there's the door. We got into the room through the door. So that's the way to get out of the room. Try to get out some other way. There's a back door, but that's how you get out. That's how you got in. So he reasons, if you understand how we got into the material existence to begin with, there's a clue how to get out of material existence. Really simple. So Jiva Goswami, being the scholar that he is, he presents, some people say, da-da-da-da, and then he refutes da-da-da-da. Some people say, blah-blah-blah, and he refutes blah-blah-blah, and he gives different ideas of different philosophies that say different things, and refutes them. Then he says what the real cause is. The cause is bahir-mukha-jiva. turning our attention away from Krishna. We turned our face, literally, away from Krishna. Just like looking at the sun. You see light. Turn your face away from the sun. What do you see? You see shadow. So we're seeing the shadow existence. How did that happen? We turned our face. So what's the solution? Turn your face to the sun. Look to the light. In the language of the Vedas, what is it? Yeah. Tamasima Jyotir Gama. You heard that one. That's back to Godhead. That's the back to Godhead slogan, magazine, from that. Jyotir Gama. Go back to Godhead. Tamasi Ma. Say no to Maya. Turn away from the illusion. Turn your attention. So, there are steps. So, Kapila Deva is presenting what those steps are, how we got into this material consciousness thing, and what it does to us. Although, paropi, although we're transcendental, here we are, in a not very transcendental place. It's not just this neighborhood, it's the material world. Not a transcendental place. This chapter is describing the principles, fundamental principles of material nature that are operating when we turn our attention away from Krishna. We make that primordial mistake and boom, boom, it's like handcuffs on your legs and tied up around your back and tie your legs and you're a captive. I'm independent. I've declared my independence. All around the world they celebrate in their different cultures and countries. Independence Day. China is a very hard-working country. Oh, do they work hard. But they have a week off of work. Service industries have to keep going, but the commercial ones, they shut down. Celebrating the independence of China. The People's Republic, when Mao and the people fought against the emperors and militarily defeated them. So they have a big celebration. Yay, Mao, and yay, Independence Day. Now we're free. They're as captive as they were before. Not just because of the particular type of government, it's just being embodied, having material bodies. And not being in transcendental consciousness. In India, and you know, so forth and so on. America, Independence Day. I'm going to read a little section where it's meant primarily just to appreciate how Prabhupada presents Krishna consciousness in very simple language. It's a paraphrase of the verse from the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Listen to how Prabhupada explains it. It fits in perfectly with this verse, but it's presented so simply, just so digestible. Lord Krishna says, therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, that Maya, his material energy is so forceful that it is insurmountable. But if a living entity simply understands that his constitutional position is to serve Krishna, and he tries to act on this principle, then, however conditioned he may be, the influence of Maya immediately vanishes. This is clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita's 7th chapter. Krishna takes charge of anyone who surrenders to him in helplessness, and thus the influence of Maya or conditional life is removed. Problem and solution. There's the door. Head towards the door. Turn your attention again to Krishna. At least in principle, however conditioned you may be. Don't whine and complain, oh, this pain, that idea, my attachment, those people, da-da-da-da-da, whine and forget that stuff. Just head to the door. Take shelter of Krishna. Follow the principle to your capacity. Follow the principle. And Krishna takes charge of such a person who approaches him in helplessness. And Krishna removes that influence of Maya. But he wants to see our shelter taking. He wants to see that. And he wants to know that it's sincere. One lecture Prabhupada said, Krishna will test our sincerity. He'll ask, are you sure you want me? Maybe a little Maya. Here's a little Maya, But the devotee says, no, I only want you. Oh. He really wants me. Well, what if there's an obstacle? We all know what obstacles are. We experience them regularly. What if there's an obstacle? Do you really want me? And when Krishna sees, I'm continuing, paraphrasing Prabhupada's description, when Krishna sees, yes, the living entity says, no matter what obstacle, I am going to persevere. Dridhavrata. Oh, he really wants me. Okay. I'll remove the obstacle, I'll take away Maya, and here I am. Like that. It's not dependent upon our effort. Krishna wants to see our sincerity. We show our sincerity. We endeavor. That's what the living entities do. We endeavor. And Krishna's the controller. We serve, and Krishna controls. That's the program. As long as we continue to try to be the controller and call it service, we're still captives in the grip of Maya. And it's painful. It hurts. It's deeply on the spiritual level, most importantly, it hurts. But even otherwise, it hurts. The spirit soul is actually Satchitananda, eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge. Under the clutches of Maya, however, he suffers from continued birth, death, disease, and old age. Another appreciation of Prabhupada, how he composes his purports. If you take the time and you go sentence by sentence or even phrase by phrase, try it sometime. I've done it many times. All that he does is restate scriptural verses. He doesn't do anything else. He's presenting it with realization, for sure. He's presenting it to a particular audience, for sure. But he doesn't pull anything out of the air. fabricate something. It's scriptural, scriptural, one after the next, after the next, after the next. He's so faithful to Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and the teachings of the predecessor acharyas. He hasn't done anything creative, inventive, that is to say. He's just giving his realization that's replete with scriptural evidence. Therefore, it's very powerful. One has to be serious to cure this condition of material existence and transfer himself to Krishna consciousness. For thus his long suffering may be mitigated without difficulty. In summary, last sentence. The sufferings of the conditioned soul are due to his attachment to material nature. This attachment should thus be transferred from matter to Krishna. End of purport. That's a principle also that we've heard so many times. And when we try, not so easy. He makes it sound so easy. It actually is easy. It's just our determination is weak. There's a statement in the Bible that says, spirit is willing, but flesh is weak. We give in to the dictates of the flesh, the demands of the body and the mind. This compelling, enforcing, pushing, powerful agent of material nature is acting upon us. We have these bodies. I'll share a little anecdotal story. Make it a shorter version. I was attending a home program once in a place where the host couple were kind of new devotees. They're part of a larger sangha of devotees that had been practicing Krishna consciousness. One of them was newly involved with the mature group, and they wanted to host a program, invite their friends and introduce their friends to Krishna consciousness. They were very enthusiastic, kind of social people, so they had nice social networks. 30 families were supposed to come to the program. They made all this prasadam for 30 people, 30 families. Said, don't have an unrealistic expectation. Let me tell you what the rule of thumb is. Of all the people that you invite, half of them will say that they can come, half of them will make some excuse why they can't come. Of those that commit that will come, half of them will come, and they'll come in time for prasadam. He said, no, they're all going to come. I said, okay. I hope you have a plan for the extra prasadam, how you're going to distribute it. So it's all new people, so make your presentation really simple. I said, okay, I'll make it really simple. Krishna Consciousness 101. I'll make it so simple even the kids will stay awake. Even the new kids. So when we got there, sure enough, it was just the couple, the host, and a few of the regular devotees. And none of their 30 families showed up. So I had the children come sit right in the front, so the class was for the kids, thinking that later when the people do come, they'll hear the interaction with the kids and then they'll be able to pick it up on kids level. And they'll also think, oh, it's really nice, they're educating our children. This is good, educating the children. We don't need it because we're fine, but our children need it. You know the mentality. So I said, okay, kids, I'm going to give you a question, and you see if you can give the answer. You're going down, you're a spirit soul, and you're going down the path of life. And there's this idea going down the path of life, yay, I'm going to enjoy. And then something happens, and then enjoyment doesn't work out. So then you think, okay, I'll just try it differently. You try it differently, and the enjoyment doesn't work out. So then you make some other adjustments, and you keep doing that again and again and again and again, and lifetime after lifetime, even in different species of life, and you keep trying and trying, and it's not working out. Then you decide, okay, enough of this program. I'm just going to do a U-turn and go back. I want to be with Krishna. But you can't just do a U-turn and go to Krishna. It doesn't happen like that. Just decide, okay, I'm going back to Krishna. Why? You know, raise your hand. See if you can come up with an answer. You know, the kids, they were giggling and raising their hand, and you called on them, and they were like, anyway, some of that went on for a while. They different silly things. And then one little girl sitting right in front, 4.5 years old, after everyone stopped giggling, she raised her hand and said, the soul says yes, but the senses say I want to enjoy. And everyone went, oh. Very good. Then another boy, inspired by what she said, and the mind says, I want to be independent. Okay, you figured it out. Now what to do? Because there's this impelling force of material nature. Even when you know that's the program, the senses are saying, the soul is saying, I want to be with Krishna, but the senses are impelling, I want to enjoy. The mind is saying, I don't want to give up my independence. It's just the mind chattering or screaming. But we're not independent anyways. We're not the mind. But these forces are acting upon us. So, in this little section, because Devahuti's asked this question, he's giving the answer. How do we get out of this condition? He doesn't just say, there's the door. He's giving a detailed description of how you got through the door. And how you're going to make your way out, and the obstacles in making your way out. There's different shackles on your arms and legs, and bound behind your back, and gagged, and blindfolded, and in a straitjacket. It's not so easy. On the other hand, it's easy. You have Krishna's help. He can remove the shackles. He can take you out of the prison. He can take away the influence of the material energy. You take away the material consciousness. It's just a question of what we're attached to. That's the summary statement at the end of the purport. I'll read it again. In summary, the sufferings of the conditioned soul are due to his attachment to material nature. This attachment should thus be transferred from matter to Krishna. Sounds simple. And it is. But when we're attached, it's not so simple. The application part is not so simple. And I wanted to end with just reading the Sanskrit for the next verse, text 8, and see if anyone can recognize this phrase. Karya karna kartritve karnam prakritim vidhu Bhoktritve sukadukhanam purushak prakrite param. Does that sound familiar? Those of you that know Bhagavad Gita? Yeah. Chapter 13, text 21. Starts the same. Karya karnam kartritve. The next line's a little different. Bhoktritve hetur uchate. But this one is karnam prakritim vidhu. But here's bhoktritve sukadukhanam. Same message. Sankhya philosophy. Chapter 13. Bhagavatam, Kapila, Sankhya philosophy. It's not a different philosophy. Krishna's expansion is Kapila Dev. He's not giving two different messages. But the detail that's presented by Kapila Dev in this section is more expansive. I'll just read the translation. The cause of the conditioned soul's material body and senses, and the senses' presiding deities, the demigods, is material nature. This is understood by learned men. The feelings of happiness and distress of the soul, who is transcendental by nature, are caused by the spirit soul himself. The spirit soul, specifically, purushak sukha dukha nam bhoktritve hetur uchate. Because of our desire to be the enjoyer of matter, we'd experience happiness and distress. So someone goes, oh, I'm distressed. Blah, 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 something. I'm distressed. Okay, here's the solution. Give up your attempt to be an enjoyer. Huh? No way, man. I'm not going to give up my attempt to be the enjoyer. I just want my distress to go away. Can you fix my distress or I'll go somewhere else? I'll take my distress problem to another person. The solution offered by the Bhagavatam and by Bhagavad Gita, and by Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita, is go to the root of the problem. So we'll continue tomorrow morning. This evening, I'm going to, if technology cooperates, we're going to go to Radhakund. Five, six days ago, I was in meeting, so I couldn't participate like this. The appearance day of Radhakund in our Vaishnav calendar. So we're going to go to Vrindavan and visit Radhakund tonight with pictures. You'll like, I'm sure. Okay, any comments or questions? Yes? Here's a microphone that works.
Maharaj, you were mentioning that in our workplace we are forgetful typically. We forget whatever we hear. The endeavors, like I'm personally able to make is sometimes I try to chant, sometimes I try to remember some class points, but the inspiration from Sankhya point of view is very less. Like the verse you quoted that we are not the doer, the results are not because of us, and we are not the inducers of other people to act and so on. But from that side, like the discrimination is very poor. From that side, inspiration doesn't come from Sankhya point of view. Is that also required, or these endeavors are sufficient?
It grows. As your Krishna consciousness grows, that realization grows. Even in the workplace. You can't be lazy, you have to apply the teaching. But you apply the teaching, and according to your evolution, or maturing of your Krishna consciousness and your application of the principles. You don't have to be caught up in, you know, the doership mentality in the workplace. The whole workplace is filled with it, but you don't have to be doing that. And it doesn't mean you become an underperformer as a result. You're because of detachment, you're a better performer, superlative performer. But it's a matter of consciousness. And it's not just, you know, in the workplace. It's, you know, in the home. And in the social circumstances of life. And other things outside of our immediate sadhana bhakti, direct execution of devotional practices. It's Krishna consciousness is meant to be non-secular. It's not just when you're doing your devotional things, then you're Krishna conscious, and then you're material conscious the rest of the time. Put that on a pan scale, and how much of the time are we doing our duties? Most of the time. But Krishna consciousness is all the time. While fighting on the battlefield, Arjuna was to be Krishna conscious. Yeah.
Maharaj, yesterday you spoke about the conversation between Lord Kapila and his mother, and today about the living entities declaring a sandal and Krishna checking if you really want, maybe you want a little bit higher. Although these are some kind of metaphorical descriptions. Now the question that I have is it Krishna is in full knowledge of the living entity's inclination? Is it that Krishna is, how do we understand this? That is, what is the intention of Mother Devotee in asking that question? What is the idea with which this living entity is saying, and surrender? Is Krishna checking out, or is it he's finding?
Yeah, it's not that, thank you. It's not that Krishna doesn't know, which is what you know, the basis of your asking your question. Krishna knows. So another way of saying the thing, same thing is Krishna knows that our resolution is not so firm, and he's giving us opportunities to make our resolution firm. And that way, testing. He's giving us a test, an exam, so we can see for ourselves, be very clear what we want. So we're somewhat clear what we want, but we're somewhat cloudy about what we want. We also want to fulfill our desires, bhakti and mukti. That way, testing. Yes?
Maharaj, you explained that if you follow the principles of our capacity, and difficulties come or when we are getting covered by illusion, and sincerely look towards Krishna, Krishna extends his help.
Krishna does what?
Krishna extends his help.
Extends his help, yes.
Maharaj, how to make sure that we are actually looking for Krishna's help? Because in a conditioned consciousness, the tendency is more to get rid of difficulties. So it may appear that I am actually turning towards Krishna for getting rid of... No, actually I am turning towards Krishna, or really I am actually wanting to get rid of difficulties. How to ensure this?
What was the last part? How can we
ensure that whether I am turning towards Krishna genuinely or...
Well, you can start with a fair evaluation that our motivations are mixed. We want Krishna and we want relief from our troubles. Our taking shelter of Krishna is strengthened when we have more troubles. It adds to the motivation. I want relief from my troubles. And when the troubles diminish, then our submission to Krishna diminishes or slackens. So that's called anishtita bhakti. So how do you go beyond anishtita and come to nishtha? You pass through the anartha nivritti stage. But how do you pass through the anartha nivritti stage? Stay focused on bhajana kriya. So I'm answering your question this way. Stay focused on what the practices are, the qualitative execution of our devotional practices is the best means to ensure that you come to the stage where it's Krishna only, not just the mitigation of... And the byproduct of that is the mitigation. But if you put the cart before the horse, I want mitigation. Krishna sees that. Oh, you just want mitigation. So, some mitigation. And then we turn our back on Krishna again. We don't even necessarily say, thank you, Krishna, see you later. It's just, we're gone. Because of selfishness. Not service-mindedness. And the steadiness is where service-mindedness prevails. In any circumstance. In any circumstance. In any circumstance. Service-mindedness prevails. That's the indicator of steadiness. And the selfishness is the... it's the... water on the fire. It diminishes the heat. It diminishes the intensity of our bhakti. Stay fixed in the mood of simply serving. Simply serving. Whatever the external, whatever the situation is that Krishna presents before you as you're moving down the path of life, here's another opportunity to serve Krishna. Let me try my best to understand how to best serve Krishna in this circumstance. Strive for that. It's like moving a match across a striker that's worn. You look for a little patch that's not so worn. Keep moving this match across that. Because it's the principle. Service. That's my real identity. It's my real nature. It's my real happiness. And when my real happiness and my real nature are fulfilled, this misery, suffering, difficulty thing fades. It's there because of my rebellious spirit. Yes.
Hare Krishna. when taste comes from Krishna, then we find that some devotees, they have a lot of strength to say no to Maya. Whereas some of this, I feel very less strength to say no to Maya. So what is that determine that somebody has very great strength to say no to Maya, somebody is very weak to say no.
What do you think? Krishna is being kind to one and not kind to another. I don't like you. I'm partial to that one, so I'm going to give them more strength. It has to do with two main things in principle. One is our sustained effort over a period of time. It's like how does one become strong by using your muscles, your muscles become strong. By exercising that principle of saying yes to Krishna, no to Maya. And then there's another very important factor, and that's offense. When we make offense, our strength is depleted. However much we may have for so long, for some period of time, been very consistent in our exercising our submission to Krishna muscle, we make an offense and big problem. When Indra offended Brihaspati and Brihaspati left the assembly of the demigods, when the Daityas heard that Shukracharya left, that Brihaspati left, Shukracharya said, "Hey, now's your chance." Because the strength of the demigods is through Brihaspati. Now that Brihaspati's gone, they don't have strength anymore. So do the needful. Grab your weapons and take over. The demigods fought, but they didn't have strength because they had lost the good favor of Brihaspati. They were defeated. So, offense reduces spiritual strength and increasing spiritual strength is just a fruit of the maturing of one's consistent, sincere spiritual practice. Yes.
What is the difference between thinking that I am the cause versus taking responsibility for one's actions?
That's what our whole class is about. It's the difference between material consciousness and spiritual consciousness, or Krishna consciousness. Even I know from Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, I'm not the doer. That doesn't mean a life of irresponsibility. A life of responsibility is the life of a devotee, but in a very different way than the materialist. Not that I'm going to responsibly make sure that everything is in order and everything's under control because I'm being very responsible. As in material consciousness, the devotee will see to all of those things with attachment to Krishna, doing those things for Krishna. That's the difference. Material consciousness, spiritual consciousness. It's a life of true responsibility. In one sense, it's so simple, and it's a fine line between acting with attachment to Maya or material existence and acting responsibly and with attachment to Krishna. From an outside position, somebody that's looking at these two individuals may look like they're doing the same thing. But it's a whole other, it's the difference between night and day as far as consciousness is concerned, and the destination of that soul is like night and day, and the qualities carried by that soul is like night and day difference. the happiness, the contentedness. So there's subjective and objective measures. The difference between material and spiritual consciousness. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.